Hello everyone, welcome to the Laura Horn Art Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. Today I have a wonderful guest. I'm chatting with Swedish mixed media artist Jenny Grant. When I reflected back on this conversation, there was one beautiful overarching theme. I can sum it up in one word: feelings. Jenny talks about getting quiet and listening to your inner voice, taking risks and embracing the ugly phase of making art. We also chat about mountain bike riding, Swedish houses, and lagom, which means not too much and not too little. Before we get started, I wanted to mention that you can find Jenny on Instagram at flowbyjenny, and you can also check out her website, which is at jennygrantart.com. And as you know, I love it when you share those Instagram stories, and it's a wonderful way to say thank you and connect with the artist that's on the podcast. So please do keep them coming, and don't forget to tag Jenny in them so that she sees them too. I think you'll be able to tell as you listen to this chat that I truly didn't want it to end, which is why it's a bit of a long one, but it is such a humorous, honest, and joyful conversation. So settle in, make yourself comfy, and enjoy. Normally, I start an interview with your background, and we will get to that. But I thought that today we could start with where you are at the moment. So what are you up to? What's going on in your artsy world?
Yeah, oh, that's a lot. Maybe we won't even be able to talk about something. No, but yeah, I'm very busy. I'm actually, it's summer in Sweden or the end of the summer. So I'm just kind of getting back from some holiday. But even during the holiday, I have been working because I love what I do and I can't really stop, but I've been trying to kind of relax a bit. But now it's full speed, and I just launched a class yesterday actually. And so I've been working really hard in selling that, and yesterday I had a live session to kick it off. So there is a lot going on with questions and adding to that class, because I always add as I go. When people ask questions, I add things to my classes. So that's an online class. And that is one of the things I'm working on. And the other thing that's coming up very quickly is Art Trail, a local open studio event in my area. And I'm arranging it. So I'm one of three ladies that are actually doing the whole arrangement for the event. And I'm also exhibiting, and I will have four artists in my studio exhibiting their art. So the planning for the event, which includes 95 artists, so it's a,
wow.
It's a big event with all the marketing, and you know, we have a big map with mapping out all the artists and where they are, because everyone is opening their studios up. I have just finished the website. We have been running this for 4 years or four times. We run it every other year. This year, we have redone, or I have redone, the website for it. And just adding 95 artists to the website has taken many hours. My kids have actually helped me as well. Then the planning for the exhibition here with the five or four artists plus me. And then I also have to paint, because I don't have art enough to exhibit. So this is the first weekend in September. So I'm trying to really kind of get time to paint and do my own art. And I need some space to be able to do that, to kind of get into my flow. And so it's a little bit busy. And at the same time, I'm really trying to slow down and paint at the same time, which is a bit of a challenge, but that's the way I kind of operate. So I love it. So that was a very quick thing about what I'm doing right now.
It's amazing how you said at the beginning that you just had a bit of a break, or tried to have a break, and then you went on and told us all the things that you've been working on. And I'm wondering, was that a break?
Yeah, the thing is, I'm really loving what I do, and it's on my mind all the time. And I feel it's for me, I think relaxing and slowing down is something that is important in the middle of all the things I do. So just taking a break, a week off, is not really how I keep my energy up and kind of recharge. I need to get that into my kind of daily routine, if that makes sense. But for my family, I feel that it's unfair in a way that I pull up my computer and my phone everywhere we go because I need to answer something or send something or post something. But they are really used to it. To really be able to relax, I kind of need to do these things. Otherwise, they are on my mind and I feel that I kind of can't really relax properly. So a bit of working in the middle of the holiday is the way I do relax, I guess.
Yeah, I can relate to that. And one of the things you mentioned, like if you take a long break and then all this work accumulates, that can then compound stress and it doesn't end up being very relaxing because you've got all that on your mind. So I really like that idea of bringing relaxation into your day. What are some of the ways that you do that?
Yeah, I can tell you the ways I would like to do it and I need to, but I'm really bad at actually doing it. But I mean, the older I get, the more I learn to know myself, and I really need to do things to relax during the day. But I'm really bad at it because that's the first thing that goes when things adds on. I kind of take away these things. So I'm really bad at it, but it's kind of my goal every year to get more of it into my daily life. And what I do is I do a lot of yoga. I've been going to classes for many, many years. But what I have found is that doing just small kind of sessions sounds really kind of boring, but just do my yoga moves or just get a little bit of that kind of flow into my body at different times of the day, just kind of on the floor in the kitchen or in my studio, that really kind of brings more to me on a daily basis than actually going 1 hour to a yoga session. I've been practicing Mysore yoga, which is actually unled. So I have a practice that I can do on my own. So I don't really need to go somewhere. I feel that when I do it, when I actually stop and do it in the middle of the day, that gives me a lot, but I'm really actually bad at it. So I don't want to lie and say that I do it every day because I don't, but I would love to. So that's one of the things that I really feel is important for me. And then the other thing that I try to do is really relaxing for me is actually mountain biking. So I bike in the forest. And when I do that, it's quite technical. So I really have to be there. If my thoughts are kind of wandering off, I actually fall off my bike. So I have to be there. So that's a really good way for me to focus on exactly what I'm doing when I'm doing it. And I'm out in the forest. So being in the nature and focusing my thoughts on where I am at that moment, that is extremely relaxing for me. So that's another thing that I do. But if I would not have my bike, if I'm out walking in the forest, my thoughts are somewhere else. I can't focus. But being on my bike, because it's so hard, actually brings my thoughts to that specific moment. So I found a couple of things that really kind of helps me and my thoughts.
It's so good to have something like that where you can, when you do it, you are able to find that stillness and you're not thinking about all the different things, the exhibition that you're getting ready for and the online class that you're making. And because with so much going on, it can be very hard to switch off at the end of a day when you have or when you are wearing all those hats.
Yeah, it's always kind of in my mind. As soon as I don't have anything else to focus on, I have three kids, so there are a lot of other things going on. So the thoughts about the kids and where they are and what they need and my business are on my mind all the time. So the only way to kind of relax, I'm also trying to do a lot of, or not a lot, I'm trying to do meditation or try to start to meditate, but I find that my mind has a really hard time to shut down and be quiet. The biking is one of the best way I think I've found that really kind of gets my mind to be quiet for a bit. And the funny thing is that when the mind is quiet for a bit, ideas and solutions to problems or to challenges are popping up. That's the really funny thing. So in the middle of biking, even though I'm not really thinking about something, I just come up with great ideas. And I think that's a thing with the human mind. We do process things in the background, but when the noise is on all the time, we kind of don't really listen to that. We listen from everything that comes from the outside. We are so used to or kind of programmed to take so much in. But what we actually do need is turn off and just listen to ourselves. Well, that's a whole other conversation, actually.
it's a good one. It's so true, though. It's, you know, the amount of times that ideas come when you actually step away or you have a bath. I know that's very common. You know, people have ideas when they're having a bath or a shower or a long walk. Or, you know, stepping away from your environment and going on a holiday or something like that. But just breaking up your routine is so good. Yet we don't tend to place a high enough value on those activities or those breaks.
No, and I think it's a little bit sad. We have kind of taken the way we are living into a place where we don't really, we're even making ourselves sick by having such a high input or an environment where the noise is so high. So we have kind of built a society that is not really healthy for us, I think. So it's a little bit scary, especially having kids growing into this noise.
Yeah, I often think about that too. Just, you know, what have we created and what are the long-term ramifications of the society that we now live in with information overload all the time? I have two kids and I wonder too. I really do. And scary is a good way of describing it. You've mentioned all the things that you're working on at the moment, but I know because I've done a bit of research and I know a bit about your background that this is very different to what you used to do. And you actually trained as an engineer, which when I think about it, I'm like, could that be any more different? I'm not sure. So we have to unpack this a bit. I wanted to ask you, when you decided to train and become an engineer or go to college, did you ever consider a creative path or was engineering what you wanted to do straight away?
I've always kind of been drawing and painting and been really kind of loving that as a kid. And growing into a young teenager, I spent my time on other things a bit. But there are a couple of things that I've always, my whole body has kind of reacted on, and that is different kinds of art studios. Whenever I kind of walk in, and it doesn't have to be big at all, so if I walk into a creative space, I kind of get an amazing feeling in my body, and I have had that all my life. So there has been something that has kind of been calling that way. After high school, when I started to look at what I actually wanted to do, because I kind of knew that I wanted to go into university and continue to study. Art as such was probably not even in my mind, but because I loved physics and maths and all the science, I've always been extremely interested in that and curious. But I was looking at doing an industrial design degree, but it was very, very hard to get into. And when I was studying, that was not that big at that time. So industrial design was not not that big, but it has been with me the whole time. And another area that I was looking at was interior design and do something within that. But for some reason, I couldn't really make up my mind. And I started with university just doing something that opened all doors. So I was studying, actually, it doesn't sound like it opened up a lot of doors, but from a career point of view, it does. But I was studying physics and maths. So for me, that was opening up all doors, which is funny. But I kind of just moved along because I've never had a goal where I want to go. I'm just following what I enjoy doing at the moment. And that's how I've been living my life all along, I think. I've just kind of taken the opportunities that opens up for me. So I just went for that, to study that. And then I moved into medical electronics and life science, which I loved because it was so much about people and our bodies. So I was working within the medtech, the medical technology area, for 20 years, actually, after that.
So you were working for a medtech, I don't know if I've got the word right. What kind of company did you say it was?
I have been working with several companies, and I've been working mostly within medtech, which is actually creating or developing and selling technical equipment to the hospitals. So I've been working within, I've been measuring pressure within the stomach, and I've been looking at eye movements to decide different diagnostic or different diseases. So I've been working with the technology that measures something in the body to help people and hospitals to diagnose and treat different diseases.
So at what point did you start painting and exploring that side of yourself?
I've always had the paints with me, you know, when I move, or I've been moving several times, and I always have had a box with some acrylic paint and some watercolor and pencils and papers. But during my young adult years, I very, very seldom pulled them out. And there are a couple of reasons for that. But when I got my second kid, working full time and having two kids at home, toddlers, in Sweden, we have fantastic childcare. So we can work full time and have small kids at the same time. But when I was in that time in my life, I didn't have much time for myself. And I realized I need to kind of find something to do where I got some time for myself, doing something that I loved. And that's when I started to pull out my paint. And I actually pulled out acrylic paint, which I had not been working a lot with. I was, as a teenager, I worked mostly in watercolor, but I pulled out the acrylic paint that I had. I just started to put paint on paper or canvas, and layers and layers and layers on the same canvas. And the only reason I did it, and the only kind of goal, was to get some time for myself. I was not trying at all to get a result or painting something special or creating anything. It was just putting the paint onto the canvas. And I did that for many years. So that's when I felt I needed this time. I needed this for myself. It really gave energy back to me so that I can go back and work and take care of my kids and being a better mom and a happier person.
So it started as a personal practice.
Yes.
At what point did it start to evolve and shift in terms of realizing that maybe this was something that you could turn into a business or maybe start selling your work? When did that happen?
Two different things, actually, because I was painting like this for several years. We moved into a house where I had a small part of a room where I could just leave my paints and the brushes and my canvases out. So I had that space and I just painted. I just walked in there, painted for half an hour and then left for many years. And I was not creating anything. And then one day I walked into a place that just opened, a yoga studio. This lady was creating a little shop. And as I said before, I always really kind of felt in my whole body when I walked into spaces where studios and creative places where people create something. It really kind of just turned my whole body on. And this place, even though it was not a creative place in terms of painting, it was definitely a creative place in terms of this lady turning this business into something. And she had this little shop, white walls. She was selling yoga things, and I did a lot of yoga. So for some reason, a lot of that energy went into all the paintings that I did at home in my own space. And I walked into this place. I just asked her, would you like some art on your walls? And she said, yeah. Do you paint? Yeah, I have a lot of paintings. So I could hang them here. And she said, yes. And I said, I'll walk home and I'll come back with some and you can see if you like them. I walked out and I was so surprised. I walked out there and I was thinking, who was that that said these words in that shop? It was not me. Someone just kind of threw this out. And I got a bit scared of where it came from. And I went home and I got all, I had heaps of paintings. I put them into my car and I drove there and she loved them and she put them up. I had never, ever showed this for anyone. I don't even know if my husband had actually looked at the paintings I had been doing. No one had seen them. And now they were hanging in the shop in the local area where everyone knew me. And I was really kind of shocked, this may be the wrong word, but I was really surprised that I asked this question and that I did this. It was something that just came through. It just kind of, I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. It was a very special moment and it just happened. It was no plan. And people and my family, they just, what? Are you hanging your painting? Are you painting? They didn't even know I was painting that much. So that was the kind of first time I exhibit my art or I kind of started to show it. And the second really big thing, I got pregnant again, and with my third kid, we decided to, my husband is a Kiwi, he's from New Zealand. So we decided, in Sweden we have these fantastic maternity leaves. We have 18 months paid. Wow. Maternity leave.
that's yeah. Amazing. Very good.
That is amazing. So when I got pregnant again, we got these 18 months paid. So we decided to move to New Zealand during that time. And my husband actually quit his job and we sold a lot of things. And we just went for 2 years to New Zealand and the kids went to school there. And yeah, that's a story of its own. But on the plane there, I was thinking, okay, now I'm going to a new place. I'm going to be on maternity leave. I'll have 3 kids at home. What do I want to do? What do I want to get out of this? Because the family will get a lot of, out of it. But what do I want? And I, on the plane, was actually really kind of thinking about this question. And I came up with 2 things. I said to myself, I want to paint a lot. And I want to bike. Because I had never been biking. But it was something that I felt that I really wanted to do. So the first thing I did when we got there was to buy a lot of paint, and I bought a mountain bike. And these 2 things have changed my life quite radically, because both of those are really important to me. As I said, the biking is really where I can relax and be extremely mindful. And the painting I turned into a business at the end. But that was a moment on that plane, having those 24 hours of extreme stress before we left, and then sitting on this plane gave me some real insights. So it's actually 2 very specific moments that have changed it. And I think both of them has very much to do with just listening to myself and being in my own being when I took these decisions.
Yeah, I love that you spent that time on the plane asking yourself what you really wanted. It's such a beautiful thing to be able to listen in and really hear what it is that you want, like what your soul wants.
Yeah, and I think sometimes we make a big deal out of it. I've been searching my whole life. I've been reading all these books about what to do and find who you are and blah, blah, blah. But actually, when I have had these moments, I don't know, it has been so obvious in a way. So if you just give yourself the time to really just listen, I think all the answers are within ourselves, which is really a cliche, I really, really believe it. But the noise from the outside just makes us not being able to listen. So these two moments, I really kind of opened up to my own the knowledge within myself in a way.
So when you got to New Zealand, knowing this, you had three children setting up in a new country. How did you make sure that you were able to paint and bike or ride your bike? I don't know what the right way of saying it is.
No, I don't know either, actually. But I did it very, very simple. And I think that's one of the things that I've realized. The things that I've done very simple and let it take its time and slowly progress, that's the things that has really kind of become something. So the painting, I bought paint. I bought a box. My husband bought a plastic sheet that you put over stuff, tarpaulin. Yeah, he bought one that was too small for whatever he was going to do and gave it to me and said, oh, maybe you can use this when you paint. And I said, oh, that's brilliant. So I just put this little tar on the table. It was just a plastic sheet or on the floor, actually, and pulled my paint out. And I was sitting on this tar on the floor. I didn't have a table. I didn't have anything because we didn't really have any furniture when we got there. We just kind of were renting and I didn't want to paint on any of the rented tables or so. So I just put this tar on the floor and I painted there. And as soon as the kids came home or something was needed to do, I just folded it up. I didn't even kind of rinse my brushes almost. I just kept them in a bucket of water. I just pulled it together, put it in a plastic box and we're storing it in the kitchen or somewhere. So it was super simple. I could just pull that box out and unfold my stuff and sit on the floor and just paint. So I made it really simple so that I could pull it out very quickly and just do a little bit and then pull it back. I didn't do a big thing out of it. I just made sure I got some time here and there. And it slowly, slowly grew into something bigger. And I actually walked into a newly opened gallery in a local gallery where we lived. And he just opened the gallery. And I just thought, oh, I could ask him how you do when you want to exhibit art. So I just said, I'm an artist. I had never said that before. And I don't really know how to exhibit. What do you do? How do you get into a gallery? And he said, oh, do you know, I actually have a week left here because he was just opening up. Would you like to exhibit your art this week? And I said, yeah. So I just got into that. So that was kind of the next big step in my steps of becoming an artist and building that business. I just got that opportunity to actually exhibit my art.
So you have a very distinctive style with your art and you often use a quite grungy kind of color palette and you paint a lot of portraits. How has that style of work evolved, and was that what you were doing then, or has that sort of taken some time to develop?
Yeah, it has, and my style and my process is so linked to everything we have been talking about, actually, because what happened when I was a teenager was that I realized that I could not paint. I was not good enough. The pictures I had in my head never ended up on the paper. Never, ever. I was never kind of satisfied with what I was doing. So when I started to paint when my kids were small, and I just painted for getting that time, I tried to have no pictures in my head. So I started with just playing around with paint and abstract paintings, not judging what I was doing. I was just painting because I needed that time. And what I realized when I was kind of getting rid of all the pictures in my head, I was just playing around. The uglier, the better. I just realized that, oh, something is coming through that I really like, and I like doing it. So I did a lot. So my whole process, and actually every class that I'm teaching nowadays, is about getting rid of these pictures in your head, just doing what you really love doing, doing more of that, being brave and try new things to see if you like them. If you like them, incorporate them and do more of those. And that's how my style and my process evolved. And what happened when I was painting all these abstract paintings, I saw eyes everywhere. So that's some kind of brain damage I have. I see eyes everywhere. So I just saw these eyes everywhere, and I couldn't draw faces, and I couldn't definitely not paint faces. But one day, standing there on my own, just painting because I loved painting, I kind of started to draw and paint eyes. The more I did it, the better I got, obviously. And that's how it works. I mean, if you want to do something and you practice and do it a lot, you will get better at it. So on my own, in my studio or in my little room, I painted all these eyes. And slowly I found a way that I enjoyed doing it, and I enjoyed the results. So they kind of just came about. And the process of creating my faces came from me having to do it in a way so that my inner critique or my judgment didn't judge me and stop me on the way. Because every painting that I paint has an ugly face where everything just looks horrible. But I have a process that allows me to, or not allows me, but that brings me, kind of lets me continue even though it looks ugly. And that's how my style came about. And the collage, in I always start with collage. And that started with that I'm so afraid of the white surface. I hate the white surface and I can't paint on a white surface. So I started with collage, and I realized that put paint on the collage paper is so much easier than to put paint on a white piece of paper. So it's kind of my whole style. It's all about figuring out a way to actually paint because I love it, even though I have all these trolls in my head telling me that I can't. That's where it comes from.
That's really interesting, because as you were talking, I wanted to ask you whether or not you struggled at any point at the beginning with that ugly phase, and then you were able to learn how to be more accepting in it as time went on. Is that what happened?
Yes. So my ugly paintings, according to myself, my ugly paintings stopped me when I was a teenager and a young adult to paint, because I was just not happy with it, and it just made me frustrated, and there was no positive feelings in painting because the result was not what I wanted. And when I started to paint, when my kids were young, the whole purpose was to just get time to play. And through that, I realized that, hey, when I actually do paint, even though it's ugly or become ugly, and I don't think about that result, I enjoy it. I enjoy what I'm doing. And the more I practice, the better I get. So yeah, definitely all the steps in my process and the style and the way I'm painting is all about finding my own process to enjoy the process. So I have never kind of, maybe that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but it's not the result that has steered what I'm doing. It's not that I have a picture or a vision of what I want to do and then I do it. I try to stay in the moment and do what I love doing. And that's when the results kind of magically just appears. Also a cliche, but it's actually true. I'm really honest in that.
It sounds like you have developed or grown a really good mindset, attitude around making bad art. So much so that earlier on you said, like, the badder the better. And
yes.
And,
yeah.
And that made me laugh because that's not an easy thing to cultivate. I'm curious, when your paintings get into that ugly stage, what's going through your mind? Like, what kind of language do you use now in order to keep enjoying and moving through the process?
Yeah, that's a good question. I have a couple of tricks in, especially when I do faces, because faces are, I mean, they are so easy to kind of judge as ugly, I find at least, and I find that in my classes as well. So I have a couple of tricks to not get stuck in that ugly face. And one of the things is that I don't finish anything in the painting at any stage. So I'm not working on the background and then that's the finished, and then I do my face and I do one eye and that's finished, and then I do the mouth. Because as soon as one part of the painting is more finished than anything else, my mind starts to spin and say, oh, I really like this part. How, oh, I will ruin it. And so I'm really trying to paint everywhere on the painting at the same time and kind of keep the whole painting at the same stage. It sounds really strange, but it's something that I'm really trying to do. And I think when I succeed doing that, that's when I kind of move along in a very smooth way. I don't get stuck. And then I have another trick with my faces, actually, and that is my eyes. I never finish my eyes, and I call it that I never close my eyes. I keep the pupil and the iris totally unpainted, open, so that I can see the first layers and the background through there all the time. Because as soon as I finish the eyes, I kind of get stuck. And if other parts of the paintings are really ugly, that just pulls me off totally. So I have a couple of tricks that are very specific to exactly what I'm doing. But I think to kind of give to someone that wants to try my techniques of not getting stuck, I would say that to not finish any part of the painting, so the whole painting is a kind of at the same stage at the whole time, really helps me, because then I can stop whenever I feel I'm ready and I don't have to worry about ruining stuff, because everything is at the same kind of stage. It's a little bit hard to explain. It's easier to show, actually. And the other thing that I find is to have several things going on at the same time. So when I get really stuck with something and my mind just blocks, it's really hard to take the next step. So as soon as I feel I don't really know what to do, I just pull it away and I paint on something else. And I do paint on canvases. I have a lot of art journals and sketchbooks that I paint in so that I can get into a flow, which I talk a lot about. And my whole brand is Flow by Jenny. So get into a flow and stay in that flow. So as soon as I feel that I'm, no, I don't know, I just leave it and I do something else. So that's the two kind of tricks that I really found. And I think I found them already 15 years ago when I was in my toddler stage in my life. And I just painted, because that's what I did. I just painted. And when I thought it was not good or I didn't want to continue, I just pulled it away and I picked up the next one and I just continued. So I kind of learned that skill or added that to my process at that stage.
It's funny, when you described that, it made me think of kids at kindergarten and, you know, the way that you might have all different tables set up with different activities, and the kids are just,
yes,
like that. They'll go over to one table and they'll do it for a bit and it'll be super fun, and then it's like, no, I've had enough. And then they're on to the next table to go play with Play-Doh or do a different kind of creative activity. So it's interesting that you mentioned that.
Yes, and I think that's so true, Laura. We can, when it comes to reaching and using our creative kind of part of ourselves, we should look at the kids, because they have it. We are all born artists. I mean, I think it was Picasso that actually said it. we're all born artists. The hard thing is to stay one or something. But because the kids really know this, because they are just listening inwards and they only do what they enjoy doing. So they just kind of paint and then they say, oh, this is ugly. I'll do something else. And as you say, they even go and do some other activity like Play-Doh, or maybe they do some beading or something else. They kind of move from thing to thing and they don't get stuck. You never see a kid getting really stuck. They just move to something else. For me, that's really a way. And I think your bringing up the kids is really important. We should look more at the kids and how they operate when it comes to creativity.
Another thing that came to mind when you were talking was the way that your studio space is set up, because I've had the opportunity to watch a video that you had on social media where you did a lovely tour of your studio. And I was very curious because, A, you live in Sweden and I wanted to see what that would look like. And the other side of it was I wanted to see how you manage doing such big canvases, but also journal work, filming online classes, and all the different aspects of what you do. And it was beautiful to see your studio set up. It looked almost like a little house with different rooms. Can you describe it a bit for people who are listening?
Yes, it's I'm so happy and grateful for the space I have today. As I said, I started out and with just a tarpaulin or a plastic sheet and a plastic box where I had my studio. I even wrote my studio on it to start with. So now it's.
Hang on a minute. I just have to say, so you wrote my studio on the box or the tarp?
The tarp. Plastic box. Yes.
On the plastic box. That's yes. So adorable.
So it was so important for me that I kind of, you know, I've been talking about this studio space all through our conversation. It's something that has been very important for me or given me such a special feeling. So yeah, it was that plastic box was my studio. And now I am in this fantastic place. It's an old house built 1650.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Wow.
So the energy in the walls here and the ceiling in one part of the studio is I can reach it and I can put my hands flat, and I'm short. I'm a short person and I can put my hands flat up in the ceiling in one part of the house, because that's how you built houses at that time, because it's really cold in Sweden. So you need to preserve heat. But yeah, so I got the opportunity to rent this place. It's very close to where I live. It's just 10 minutes bike ride here.
Perfect.
And the house is not that big, but it has two parts to it. It has one part where the ceiling is really low and there are two small rooms. One I use as a storage place and the other one is where I film all my classes. And then I have one part that is open. The ceiling is taken away, or the attic is taken away, actually. So the outer ceiling is, of course, there. But it's very high. The ceiling is really, really high in there. And in there, I can paint really big paintings. So it's a big space. And that's where I have all my classes as well. So I can probably have, I think I've had 8 people in there with tables and easels in my classes. So I cannot have as big classes as I had before I moved here, but it's big enough and the energy in this house is just amazing. And that video is actually on my website if someone wants to pop in there and have a look around, because it is a very special place and I'm so grateful for it. In Sweden, we have these small red houses. It's our kind of native kind of way of building houses here. This is a small red house and I've been longing for that probably 20 years to live in one, but now I at least have my studio in one, so it's very special.
It is very special. I absolutely love watching the video, And I think at the thumbnail or something like that on the video had the image of the outside of the studio. And as soon as I saw it was one of those traditional red Swedish houses, I was like, wow, this is something I need to see. So I definitely would recommend popping over to Jenny's website and checking out her studio space and all your classes and everything else that you do. At what point did it become a business? So you were painting, you had this room, you spent time in New Zealand. Well, I should say you had a box. Your studio was a box.
Yes, I had my studio in a plastic box. Yes, and that's how we moved a couple of times in New Zealand. So I actually got a part of a garage, and those pictures, I don't know if I have those on my web, but they are hilarious because that was a very crowded place. Anyway, the decision to actually make it into a business actually happened when we lived in New Zealand during those 2 years. Because I got asked to do some kids' classes in school there, and I was very, very active online. I built a website just to start to show my stuff a little bit, and I got asked to be part of one of these collaborative online classes, Soul Food, it was called. And so I actually filmed a short class. So I did a couple of different things when I was in New Zealand, and the feeling there when I was doing these things was so different from all the other work I had ever done. So I remember two different feelings. One feeling was when I had been working crazy for a small exhibition, and the only thing I wanted when it was finished was to do it again. This feeling of, I love doing this, even though I put in long, long hours at the nights because I had the kids home during the day, so I had to work at night. Even though I was working so much for it, I wanted to do more of it. So that feeling told me that this is something I need to do to be happy. And the other feeling was when I had classes and to meet all these people and the kids and adults give what I had found, because I only teached and I still only kind of want to show my process of getting over all these hurdles that I had to start with. And the feeling of people getting so happy. So the feeling when I could give something to someone else, those two feelings said that this is something I want to do. This is something I want to do more of. So I decided on the plane back that I would only go back to working part-time when I got home. And I wanted to start to build this into something sustainable that could be a business. But it was not at all a business when I got home. But I never went back full-time to my old job.
What did you do? So it wasn't a business yet. You were on the plane. You knew that you wanted to turn it into something that could be sustainable. Did you have any ideas around what that would look like at that point?
No, not really. I didn't know at all how to build a business around my art, actually. But I was very active online at that stage. So I was very active, and especially on Facebook at that time, and connected with people that were... Maybe it was actually more to start with. I started to take a couple of classes from Flora Bowley, and I invited Tracy Verdugo over to New Zealand to run a class there because she's in Australia. So it was quite close for her to come over. And being in contact with these people really made me feel that maybe I could do parts of this as well. Maybe I could actually turn my art into a business, because just painting and selling my paintings, that would be very hard. And it's still very hard in Sweden to live off just selling paintings. But being inspired by Flora and Tracy to actually go into sharing my story and my way of working, maybe that could be a thing, both in personal, in-person workshops and online. So I started when I got home to be parts of different collaborative online classes. So I was part of the life book, Willowing Arts.
I'm nodding my head here because this part of your story is very similar to mine. I was actually involved with a couple of my friends in getting Tracy Verdugo to come to Adelaide. And and I also became a teacher on life book quite early on in my art biz sort of journey. So yeah, as you were saying these things, I'm like, oh yeah, that was something that happened for me as well. It's such a good reminder or a message around not being afraid to ask the question. So you asked yes. Tracy to come to Sweden, didn't you?
Yeah, I started with asking her over to New Zealand. And then I actually, when I got home, I said, you have to come here as well. I need you here. So she actually came to Sweden a couple of years later. And both from being inspired by other people and asking them for help, I guess, or just working together with people that are a couple of steps ahead of you, is really inspiring, helpful. And I think for me, it has been absolutely a key thing to taking these steps, is to see other people being a couple of steps ahead and kind of trotting along behind them and getting some help. And I guess they have done that as well in certain ways. So we all kind of get inspired and get pulled along by each other. I think it's an amazing community. The whole art community is fantastic with that. But being brave to actually ask and actually jump in and do things you've never done. Okay, I'm going to do an online class. Oh my God, how do I do that? And the first one I did, I still give it away as a free gift sometimes. And so it's still there. It's very simple quality wise, but there's so much joy and energy and happiness in those videos. So, I mean, even though the quality is bad, there is so much in there.
I had a very similar experience with creating my first online class. And what you said is so true, that when you create your first class, you know, you often don't have all the equipment, the quality isn't as good, the editing, even the way you speak to the camera, all that sort of stuff. But there's something else there. There's that enthusiasm and that the excitement that you're doing the class, and that shines through. So there's something very beautiful about those first classes.
Yeah, it is. There is something. I think nowadays we can start in another way. I think a lot of people probably are much more kind of confident with the technology and speaking to the camera, because we do it almost on a daily basis on our social media. So today, I mean, Instagram, I didn't even know what Instagram was. I don't even know it really existed. And Facebook, I just started when I moved to New Zealand to keep track or keep contact with my friends at home. But I slowly started there. And today, you get a lot of more confidence, and you can start much smaller than put together an online class. You can start with some free things on YouTube or just some reels, very simple, on Instagram. So I think today you can take smaller steps than what I felt that I did. I kind of jumped into an online class before I even it was head on first and just see what happened. But I think the thing to just jump in and do it and see what happens is very much true today as well. So if you want to do something, just jump in and try it. What's the worst thing that can happen? Someone says, no, this is rubbish, I don't want that. So what? Just try again. I think that braveness, and that it doesn't have to be perfect to start with, is so important to actually take those steps and go outside your comfort zone and build something different and new and grow. We need to take these steps where we don't know what the outcome will be.
So at what point did you reach the step where you could leave your part-time job and go into the business full-time?
That took a very long time, actually. So I did it very, very slowly. So I got home 2013 and I started to work half time. So 50% I worked in my old profession. And I probably did that for 2 years. And then slowly I kind of worked more and more on my art business. I just worked too much because I grew that, but I didn't stop working in the other profession in the same rate. But I did it over probably 4 years, working still in my old profession. And 2017 is the year that I usually say that I went full time on my art business, but I still had a couple of hours here and there because I was working as a consultant for a small technology company. So I could do some hours here and there. So I was very, very fortunate that they needed my service and I could do it on the side whenever I had the time. But I did that for a couple of more years. So I would say it was many years, very slowly, I worked less and less in my old profession.
So you mentioned back a bit in the conversation that making a living from selling your art alone is pretty hard, and you recognize that there would be value in bringing on online classes as it would make things more sustainable for you. What have you done in order to make your business viable and sustainable?
Yeah, I realized, or I knew all along, that just painting and selling my art, it will be hard. I will never know what I will sell the next month. Some months or some exhibitions, you sell a lot, and sometimes you have periods you sell nothing. And also, I can only do so much. It's not possible to scale, to paint paintings and then sell them. It's not really scalable. So some kind of other leg or another business was needed to kind of build a business around my art. Doing the in-person classes and workshops gave me so much. So that was one of the parts that I started very early when I got back, and I was running in-person workshops, both for kids and adults. So that's one of the parts that I really put a lot of effort into and got to be a part of my business as well. And the online classes was, as I said, I got really inspired by a lot of other artists doing online classes. I got invited to one of these collaborative things. So I thought, this is actually something that is scalable. That was the only thing of what I saw my business being that actually could scale. I mean, I can film and do an online class. I can sell it to 10 people or 100 people or 1,000 people. It's the same class. And then saying that it's a huge difference when it comes to the actual hosting of the videos and the marketing and the customer support part if you sell to 10 or 1,000, of course. So there are parts of the business of online that is very different, but the actual class, the actual filming, the actual videos are the same if I sell it to 10 or 1,000. And that I realized very early, and I thought this is something that could maybe become some kind of passive income or a reoccurring income. And I can also sell my classes for many, many years. So, I mean, I have classes that I did 5 years ago that is still selling. As I said, the quality has changed. But there is so much in those early classes and they still sell. So if I summarize and see what these classes has given me in income, it's amazing, actually. And it is scalable, but it's a huge job. It's so many hours going into my online classes, but it is scalable. And hopefully it will be a bit of a reoccurring or passive income as I grow. I'm almost there, but not totally. I cannot live off them. Definitely not yet, but going there.
So how do you split your time across all the different things? Painting, making the classes, marketing, getting ready for an exhibition, packing, shipping. there are so many jobs that come with being an artist and running a business. What's your, this could be a podcast too in itself.
Yes, I think we have covered the start of maybe three or four podcasts in this one.
It's funny. I was looking at the time and I'm like, wow, I could just keep talking to you for another hour, but we're going to have to find a way
to wrap up.
There's just so much to talk about, but I'm always super curious about this. I think I ask this question to just about every person because I'm looking for some kind of secret answer to it, which is elusive. But how do you manage your time?
I must admit that this is probably one of the big challenges I have right now, because now things start moving in so many areas. I get a little bit traction, both when it comes to selling my art and my in-person workshops and my online classes. So at the moment, this has been the case for some time now. I would say the pandemic actually helped me a little bit, because the in-person workshops and the exhibitions kind of cooled down a bit. So I've been able to focus on the online classes for this year and a half, which is really, really good. Otherwise, I don't really know what would have happened, because I had such a hard time to focus on one thing and get that going and then take the next. I'm working in parallel on everything. And that's your first question. Starting this podcast was actually right there. What are you doing right now? And I said all these three things, I think, because it's all at the same time. So, but I'm trying to really start to plan much more than I've done before. I use Trello. Trello is my brain. I mean, anything that's not in Trello, I don't know, I will never remember, or it will pop up in the wrong place at the wrong time. But so I use a couple of technical tools to actually manage all the planning and my kind of to-do lists and so on. And then I'm really trying to decide what I'm doing on different days. I must be honest and say it doesn't really work. I'm jumping around doing different things all the time. And the things that are mostly urgent, that's what I'm working on until it's finished, if it is a tight deadline. But I would like to spend time in my studio that is set off for that. I think that's extremely important for me to get that working this autumn or the second half of 2021, to set off time to paint. Yeah, I don't know. I don't have a good answer, Laura. I definitely, this is something I need to work more on and figure out and really get a grip on how to divide the time, because at the moment I'm just doing. So actually I'm not too big help there, but maybe if you ask me in half a year, I will actually have figured out, because this is one of the biggest things that I have on my goal for 2021. And that is to actually work more to a plan and divide up my time, so it's not everything at the same time at all times.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because one of the questions that I had here for you was, what's one area that you are working on in relation to your business and one area that you are working on in relation to your art? So you've covered off on the business side of things, but is there something in particular that you're working on from an art perspective at the moment?
It is the same thing. It is the same thing. I really want to get more time for my art, to get into that flow that really kind of ignite my creative spark. And when I paint, because that's where I get my energy. You were talking before actually about where I get my rest and my energy. I think I mentioned yoga and my bike, but actually painting is the third thing that really gives me energy. So if I get time to get into my flow and actually paint, that gives me so much. And I really feel I need to kind of take a couple of steps. I have so many ideas of what I want to paint and where I want to go and series I want to get out into the world. And I need to manage my time, to set off that time, and to actually spend that time. I have come so far that I actually put painting time into my agenda. That's quite new. It's just this year that I've started to do that. I must admit that I don't think I have reached that goal any of the weeks so far this year, because I just put a lot of other things in there and my head is spinning and I kind of jump on my computer in the middle of painting because I remember, oh gosh, I need to answer that or I need to add that or whatever. So my goal is to plan my time and get that time in my studio to develop my art and get that energy in back. And I have a couple of things that I need to do in my business to be able to do that. And that's to auto get more automation into my business and get some help. I need to actually get people to work for me. And that's a huge step in my business that I hope I can do this autumn as well. So yeah, that's a couple of things I'm working on.
As you were talking, I was thinking about how much of a challenge it is and also a change. When you start painting, you have a lot of time to paint before you set up a business. When your business gets bigger and bigger, all the other pressures become more and more, and carving out the time to paint becomes harder and harder. And usually what happens is exactly what you've just said. You reach a point where if you are going to continue to grow, you have to get help. Like that's the point you reach. It's such a difficult point to navigate, isn't it? That, you know, what can you get help with? How do you get it? I know I have all those questions going through my head all the time. Have you got any thoughts around that and how you might get help so that you can have more painting time?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot, and I have taken a couple of small steps towards actually doing that. One thing is actually to just map out what you're doing. I'm really bad at it, but I've been trying. I mean, just put down the different things you are doing at different times. It was funny. I wrote down all the different kind of roles that I have in my company. and I think I kind of filled a whole page of different things that I was doing. And then starting to map up a couple of those things, like now when I did my last class that I launched yesterday, I actually started to put down lists of what I'm doing, not because it's a to-do list to do, but to prepare to get help in certain areas, maybe for the next class I launch. So to map out what you do and map out the actual kind of steps or some kind of process in what you are doing. That's two things that I've started to do. And the next step will be to actually see if I can find some people. I have a couple of different things that I will do to see if I can find a person. So I will try online. I will start with that. I have some help. And my kids are actually doing a couple of things. They are helping me with small things on Facebook and on my newsletter and so on. So I hope that they might help me more and more, and I pay them for that. I'm starting. And I feel that if I can get that, it will be a huge help. And hopefully I will take that time and actually paint more. I'm afraid I will add other things, but I will really try to paint more. And then the other thing is also, you could get help with other things. It's not just in the business. There are so many other things at home that you could get help with. So it's not just the business. You could get help with other things as well. But it's funny. I actually thought about one thing when you asked the question and you said that in the beginning, you paint a lot, and then the bigger the business grow, the harder it is to get that time. And one thing that I find is really hard is if I have some spare time at home, before I always used it to paint, but I have a really hard time nowadays to tell my family that, oh, I have some spare time, I want to paint. They would just look at me and say, what the heck? You are working so much painting all the time. Would you paint now when you have some spare time? So that kind of feeling of doing it because I love it in my spare time, that's totally gone. I do some art journaling, but I never paint on a big painting in my spare time. That doesn't happen any longer. I miss that.
It's interesting the way things shift.
Yeah.
You know, what you used to do as a hobby is no longer a hobby anymore. It doesn't get done in those cracks in between. There's always something else waiting to fill up the space. Well, I think I'm going to have to bring this conversation to an end, and I don't really want to. But we have been chatting for quite a long time, and I think the last little bit, what we've been talking about, will actually lead into my last question. And you probably already know this question because I've been asking it to all of the artists that are in this series, and it is around success. And the question is, what does success look like for you as an artist, and has it changed over time? And you might want to reflect back on what success looked like for you when you were younger and you were pursuing your other career, what it looked like for you as when you were in your art as a hobby, and what success looks like for you now as a creative business owner.
I really, really think this is an interesting question, and it has so many different kind of angles or takes on it. I think it's a really hard question because I think, and it's in the core of where I am right now or have been for some time. And I think it has to do with where I come from, because I was working within the tech industry for many years. I was really successful. If you look at that part of my life, I had a really good career. I was working for a really interesting company that was moving really fast, working with really interesting technology. I was making a lot of money. I could do whatever I wanted. I could travel. I could buy what I wanted. So in that part of my life, I was successful in terms of how we as a society kind of measure success. But something was missing inside me, and I was reading so many self-help books or whatever the books are called and trying to find what was it that I was missing. Now I'm in a space where I'm trying to get those numbers. I want to sell. I'm looking at my revenue and my income, and I'm measuring different parameters when it comes to followers and clicks here and there and on my website. And so I'm back to these numbers and these ways of measuring how my business is growing and how I am doing. And when I talk about that as success, I get really kind of sad, and it triggers me. I get almost a bit angry, because is that really success? Is that really what we are here doing? I'm back into this kind of wheel of reaching something that as soon as I reach it, it just kind of moves into something bigger. I don't know. Maybe I have a strange way of defining success, or not defining success, but thought about what everyone else finds success being. But I am so much wanting to kind of move a step back inside, and what do we feel, and what is sustainable, and what is kind of an equilibrium. I don't want to go just up and up and up. I don't think that's healthy. I think that as in anything else, I mean, food, for example, it's not good to have too little, but it's not good to have too much either. We get sick if we eat too much. We need to be in somewhere in between too much and too little. And I think success in business needs to be there somewhere as well. Otherwise, we will just kind of climb a ladder and never get anywhere. So success for me today, I've been thinking so much about this. What is it? And I actually don't know. But what I'm getting down to is that it has more to do with me and my feelings and being sustainable and being not too much or too little. And somewhere there, I want my success to be today. And maybe try not to get others to measure my success and not think about what others sees, but what I feel and how I feel. I think the feeling. So every time I kind of run a workshop or I get some feedback or I sell a painting and I see the happiness of the buyer, every time I kind of give something and get some feedback back of other people being happy, I would love to measure that, and that would be my success. I don't know, I've been ranting along, but it has been moving from numbers and growth to being not too much and not too little and being more about feelings, and it's doesn't really work. I'm still looking at the numbers and talking about the numbers when I talk to others, but I really want to move into something else. We have a word in Swedish that is not, I don't think you have that in English. It's a word that is defined as not too much and not too little. Swedes think it's really boring. It's called lagom. It's something in between, always in between. And it's kind of the right amount of anything. You can ask about how much sugar do you want in your coffee? I want not too much and not too little. But I think this word is kind of cool, because it's somewhere where we need to be as a society. We need to be not too much and not too little. And that's success for me.
I absolutely love everything that you've said, Jenny. You've touched on so many things, and in particular about connecting in with your feelings. I was listening to something the other day. I can't remember what it was, but it was around like looking at each day and at the end of the day, sort of doing a little bit of a check-in to how you're feeling and letting that be a measure of success. And I thought that was such a great idea, and it really ties in with what you were talking about.
And I think that you're touching something, and that might be not connected to success, but this feeling, sometimes we feel sad or depleted or not the positive feelings. And I think it's really important to stay in those as well. That's something I tell my kids all the time. Even if you're disappointed or sad, that's also a feeling. And that's also a state. It's not just moving from that. I don't think we are more successful because we are feeling happy all the time, actually. Maybe we are more successful if we dare to feel all the feelings and just stay in there. And if someone asks me, how is it going? Oh, today is a shitty day. I'm just not happy. I never say that. Maybe it would be because that's not successful, but maybe that is what we should aim at. Daring to feel bad and good, being in the ugly face. Gosh, I just realized something. Gosh, that's where we need to be sometimes, even in business, and just stay there, dare to be there.
Yeah, I absolutely love what you said. That success could be daring to feel all the feelings. That gives me tingles. Yeah. This has been such an amazing conversation. I know that I say that about every podcast interview, but I have so enjoyed our conversation. And I think we've packed in about 5 podcasts into one, or what could have been 5 podcast episodes all into one. So thank you so much, Jenny, for coming on the podcast and chatting so honestly about all of your experiences.
Thank you, Laura. And thank you for listening to me, whoever listened, because I am really passionate about these things. And I know that I'm kind of almost ranting about certain things, but it has been such a nice conversation. And I'm really full of energy now. This day will be amazing after this talk. We should start our days every day like this, Laura.
It's funny because I came into this podcast a little bit tired because it's Friday afternoon here, or Friday evening, and I've had a pretty busy week. And now I'm about to walk out and I've got a total spring in my step. So there you go.
Oh, that's brilliant.
It's been really uplifting. Well, thank you very much. And you have an amazing day.
Yes. Thank you, Laura.
You too. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for this week. Thank you, everyone, for being here. If you are curious about Jenny's art, classes, and gorgeous studio, head on over to her website, jennygrantart.com, and over to her Instagram at Flow by Jenny. You can also find out more about my art over at my website, laurahornart.com, and you can find me on Instagram at laurahornart. Next week, the Redefining Success series continues, and I'm chatting with Kyla Givehand. Kyla talks about being multi-passionate, spirituality, and the beauty of starting small. I hope that you'll join us for that one and that you have a lovely week.